The Citadel Cafe is proudly sponsored by TweakedAudio.com. For high-performance, noise-reducing earbuds, visit TweakedAudio.com and use our code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. That's TweakedAudio.com.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 131 for Wednesday, January 14th, 2015. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff we are into. We cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and websites. Joining me tonight is Lou Page from Zombies Ate My Podcast and an upcoming show that we've teased and talked about a little bit, and he's going to fill you in right now.
Sure. Yeah, if you've listened to Zombies Ate My Podcast, you're familiar with myself and my co-hosts, Bob and Ryan. Ryan has been on this very show several times.
Yep.
Well, Bob and I have come up with an idea for a new show, and in the next few weeks, it should be showing up on iTunes, and hopefully we'll have a website in a couple of weeks. It's called Off the Cuff, and we kind of do a once a week or once every 2 weeks. We haven't set up a permanent schedule yet, but it's kind of a roundup of some of the wackiest news you've seen all week, or some interesting news that you may have missed that kind of fell through the cracks in your busy work week. Nice. And we just kind of give you a rundown of the headlines, talk about what's silly about them or what's interesting about them and why you might want to pay attention to it.
Sounds like fun water cooler talk.
Yeah, that was kind of the idea. Usually Bob calls me before we do Zamp like 5 or 10 minutes early, and we're usually waiting for Ryan, or Ryan's like, I'll be there in a minute, and Bob and I'll have a conversation, and we'll end up talking about news headlines about, hey, did you see the headline for this? Did you see it? And he went, you know, we should just record these.
Nice. So how are you, man? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. I'm doing pretty good. Except for the cold. It is really cold here.
It's cold here, too. I bundled up, and I might have not noticed as much today because I dressed for it. But when I got up this morning, the whole Twitter world here in Halifax was just, holy shite, it's cold. Minus 15 and felt like minus 15 as far as that goes. I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit. 4 degrees? Cold.
Fahrenheit, that's, you guys are, zero is freezing for you guys. So,
yes.
And we're 33 degrees for freezing. So
yeah, but it goes up exponentially. It's not like a 1-for-1.
Yeah, it was like negative 10 here.
Fahrenheit?
Today. Yeah.
What? That's crazy. What's negative? I'm looking that up right now. The internet is at my fingertips, and it has no idea.
I think that's like negative 30 for you guys.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Wow, it's not at all letting me do this. I'm trying to type this into Google and be suave about it, and it's not working at all. Excuse me while I hammer furiously.
That's fine. No. But no, it's been about 10 degrees here for the last week, but this last couple of days it's been like Arctic. To the point where I'm like, okay, the car needs to warm up before anybody goes to work. And we need to actually turn on the heat and crank up the heat, because I can't have my pets turning to ice while I'm at work.
Well, yeah. Minus 10 is minus 23. So it wasn't quite that cold here today. It was more like minus 15. Anything over minus 10 Celsius is just damn cold.
That's
just,
yes, it is.
That's booger freezing temperatures. You know, you go outside and you get 10 paces and you're like, oh, that's just great.
You get 10 paces and your eyes start to water and you're like, oh yeah. And then your eyes watering starts to freeze and you're like, I'm in real trouble now.
I saw a comic online. It was somebody in Montreal had posted something, and it was just like, when I go outside, the air hurts my face.
Mm-hmm.
Why do I live in a place where the air hurts my face?
I have this conversation with my wife pretty much every night. Remind me again why we live in Maine. Oh, that's right. We have family here. We're kind of stuck.
Family. Jeez. Screw the family. Going to California.
Hey, I have family in Florida, and they're always asking me, you should move down here.
Yeah, I've got family in Florida right now, too. My mom and my stepdad, they winter in Florida. And they've asked me if I've ever wanted to come down from time to time. And it's like, nope, you guys stay in a senior trailer park. I'm okay. I don't need to go stay in a senior trailer park, no matter how warm it is.
You'd be surprised how nice those senior trailer parks are.
Oh, I'm sure it's lovely. It's just the not my idea of spending some vacation. My sister has gone down before. My sister has gone down and done some shopping. So there's some outlet shopping in and around where Mom and Barry are. And she's done that. But yeah, I have no desire to do that. I can just tough it out. I don't have to go outside that often. The scary thing about working from home most of the time is that I can just, you know, hey, it's minus 15. I'm just not going to go outside. I had to go out today, but I bundled for it. So I didn't really feel that it was that cold, but I think when I was out, it was more like -4, -5 because it was midday and the sun was out. It was really clear here. And that's usually a bad sign. I mean, you probably have the same sort of situation when you go outside in the wintertime and they're calling for cold weather and it's a really high ceiling. Like there's just not a cloud in the sky. You know, it's going to be absolutely frigid.
Yep. Yeah. And usually if I hear you guys are cold up there or Ryan is talking about how cold it is where he is, I'm like, oh, it's coming my way.
Yeah.
It's going to be really bad.
Yeah. The jet stream is dipping and it just gets down. Because, I mean, sometimes it dips as far as New York, if I'm not mistaken, which would obviously include you guys. Well, I mean, are you very far from the New Brunswick border? I can't remember how long it would take you to get to the Canadian.
I'm about 5 hours, I think, from Canada.
Yeah. So I mean, basically,
if I go the opposite direction and into New Hampshire, I think it's actually closer.
Yeah, and so you would get the same weather that New Brunswick and Nova. Well, maybe not so much Nova Scotia, but you would definitely get like New Brunswick weather. Do you guys have a lot of snowfall right now?
We've had about 8 inches in the past week, and we lucked out. It was light and fluffy.
Yeah. See, we don't usually get that much, not at once, and if we do, it's just wet. So that's what we've been fluctuating. Like last week, it was minus 20, and then it was 2 degrees within 48 hours of each other.
Oh.
So, you know, like it snows, it rains, it melts, it freezes, it melts again, and then it's all gray. So right now we're just dealing with a lot of like very crusty snowbanks, and there was a little bit of snow the other night, but nothing really pretty. We did have some snow in between Christmas and New Year's. That was really nice. You know, but an inch, fluffy stuff.
Yep.
Snowman
and
snow.
And it melted in like 3 days.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the way
I like it.
Yeah. 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 You can think about shoveling it for 2 days, and by the time you get to it, it's like, oh, it's already done. I don't have to worry about it. Yep. Oh, man. So what have you been watching since last time we had you on the show?
Well, since I was last on the show, something new has shown up on ABC, and that is Marvel's Agent Carter.
I'm so excited to hear you talk about this. This is
like a spinoff for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., basically.
Right.
And it's only supposed to be, I think, 8 or 9 episodes. Last night was episode 3. I have watched all 3 episodes thus far. And it is exactly what I wanted from this show. It doesn't pull any punches. It is after World War II America. It takes place in 1946.
Oh, nice.
And Carter is basically Captain America's love interest. And now he's dead, and she's trying to deal with the fact that he's dead. And she works for the American government as she's supposed to be basically what is the equivalent of kind of like the CIA.
Right.
But it's a boys' club, and they all treat her like she's a secretary.
Okay.
And nobody wants to give her any credit. They give her the crappy jobs of answering the phones, and she gets no respect. And she the basic premise is that Howard Stark is a fugitive from justice. He created weapons and technology that has been stolen, and someone is selling it on the black market. And in spite of all the things he did to help win World War II, the American government thinks he's a traitor. And he is off chasing some of his stuff that went to Europe and he had to get out of, he had to flee America, and he is given, I'm trying to remember her name. They just always call her Carter. So I'm trying to remember what her first name is.
Yeah, keep going. I'll look it up.
But they keep giving, he gives her a list of things and places where stuff might be located in New York City. And basically her and his butler, who is named the same as Tony Stark's automated.
Oh, butler. So the butler's name is actually Jarvis?
Yes. And so Jarvis and her are running all over town and trying to rescue these things. In the meantime, her fellow officers are chasing her and not realizing they're chasing her, and they're leaving tips for them so that she can get away with what she's doing. And she can't admit that she's helping Stark because she'd be tried for treason.
Mm.
And it's very interesting. There's basically, they hint that there's a group called Leviathan that is like a remnant of what's left of Hydra.
Yeah, makes sense.
And they've got people here in New York City, and she's been chasing down Leviathan agents.
Oh, very cool.
It's very interesting. My favorite thing they've done, and it's in the first two episodes, not so much in the third episode, is whenever a radio is playing, there is a radio drama playing in the background, and it is a Captain America radio drama, and the female character in the radio drama, her name isn't Carter. It's like something that rhymes with Carter.
Oh, really?
And it's supposed to be her, and they keep making her sound like a ditz.
Oh.
And she's like always sitting in a cafe when it's playing. And it's like she just helped blow up a building, chased some guy, and she's sitting there. And then the radio drum will play, and it'll be whatever the Carter spinoff name is. And it'll be like, oh, Cap, thank you for saving me again. I'm such a klutz.
Yeah.
And she like rolls her eyes, and you're like, this is awesome.
Yeah, the dame in distress kind of persona from the 1940s and like the serial cartoons and stuff like
yes.
that. Yeah, no, I totally know what you mean. Peggy Carter is the name
Peggy
of
Carter,
the...
That's
of the character, and she's played by Hayley Atwell. Hello, Hayley Atwell. Same
yes.
same actor that played Agent Carter in the Captain America movies.
Yes.
Yeah.
And even, what's his name? Chris Evans is in some clips in the first few episodes.
Oh, nice. So they'd even do some like...
They basically took some footage from the original Captain America and introduced it to the show so that you'd get the idea that, oh yeah, that's right, she was Captain America's girlfriend.
Right. And well, and that's cool though, because they did that with the Winter Soldier in the first season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., right? Like they did a real cool
yes.
tie-in with the Captain America Winter Soldier movie, you know, with a to be continued kind of in the show. And then this show, it looks like they've just taken the Agent Carter character right out of the movie from the first movie and just put her right into a period piece. I'm glad that it's a period piece. I'm glad that they didn't do some sort of weird science fictiony stuff to make her in like present day New York.
No, there is none of that. And the technology, like they do stretch the technology a little bit. Like at one point she needs to get into a safe. And she has like a James Bondy watch thing that she puts on the safe, turns the dial, and it decodes the safe and opens the safe for her.
Yeah. Well, they had stuff like that in the James Bond movies. And,
right,
and,
right.
And they established that with the Hydra tech in the first Captain America. They had like lasers, didn't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's not a super far stretch.
Yeah.
But I was worried that they were going to go too far.
Yeah, as long as she's not using the internet to, you know, solve problems.
Right.
Yeah.
And I have to say, the critics love it. It's got really, really high ratings. I'm hoping that they make it more than just an 8-episode thing. I would love to see, like, every season when they do the mid-season hiatus, then bring this back again. That I think that would be a... really clever on ABC's part.
Mm. Yeah, it looks like a lot of fun. And it looks pretty action-packed as far as the trailers go.
Every episode is pretty much nonstop.
Nice.
Like, they stop and it's like, oh yeah, here's the plot point. Now let's go have her hang off the side of a building. Oh, what's this? Oh, there's a plot point. Here we go. There's the weapon. Okay, here comes the bad guy. Let's have him hit her with a car.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay.
Because that was the problem I had when I tried to... I didn't even watch a whole episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but it felt like a combination of like Law and Order and X-Files. And I was like, well, here's the procedural. We're going to stand around and talk about solving a crime for a little bit. And, oh, hey, here's a glimpse of something weird. And now we're going to talk about the weird thing for the rest of the show until we can find where the weird thing went. Like, it just, yeah.
Well, the first time I watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., that first episode, I turned it off and was like, this is garbage. I don't want to watch it. And then I went back after a couple episodes it aired and I watched it again and I suffered through it and I went, okay. And then it takes about 4 episodes for you to kind of identify characters and go, okay, I see what they're doing. And then magically, if you keep watching, like midway through the season, all of a sudden it's like Winter Soldier happens and you go, oh, they've been just giving us filler because the big things, they couldn't give us too much information because of Winter Soldier.
Right, yeah. I heard that you have to stick with it until the whole Winter Soldier crossover, and then from there it's a much different
show. It's like 10 or 12 episodes, and then all of a sudden it's like, bad guys everywhere, who can you trust, what's going on? And you're like, oh, okay.
I kind of dislike when shows do that. We discussed it a little bit last week with Flash, in that the Flash had planned for obviously not being a full season, so it is now, you know, the season, the, what do they call them now, the mid-season finale, really felt like, okay, where are we going from here for the rest of the season? It felt very much like a season ender, right? Because they originally had planned for not that many episodes. And I wish that shows would not like, oh, hey, we've got this really important thing that's going to happen, but we're going to try to fill 10 episodes up to that point so we can make a 22 episode season. I would much rather have a 10 episode season and have it be epic.
I agree with you completely. I just watched, and I know you've discussed it. I know you've seen it. I just finished watching Marco Polo.
Oh, nice. You finished it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I finished it too.
And that was the perfect amount of episodes.
Yeah, exactly.
It was like 10 episodes, and they didn't give you any filler. Some of the episodes were longer than others. Some of the episodes were shorter than others.
Yep.
But it was like, they told you the story, they gave you an episode, and you moved on.
Yeah. I mean, I know that I've brought this up several times on the show before, but I would argue that's one of the reasons why Game of Thrones is so successful, is that they just jam-pack everything into 10 episodes. If they can't do a whole book or whatever in 10 episodes, then they split it. You know, they season 3 and 4 was the third book. You know, they can handle it properly, but no one there says, yeah, there's nothing going on in this particular section of the chapter, so let's drag it out and just make the season just these few boring chapters, and then we'll go from there. Next season it'll be big, you know, or we'll drag things out for 7 episodes, and then the last 3 will be amazing. They don't do that because, I mean, people don't respond well to that. And I find, I mean, you'd mentioned in the pre-show that you're really busy right now. I mean, I've always got a lot of stuff on the go. I don't have 12 hours to sit down to find out if I even like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yep.
Right? Like, I have 2. You've got 2 episodes to convince me that this is going to be worth a third. And if you can't do that, then, you know, I'm going to have a hard time jumping on board. I'm going to have to be, it'll be a sick day where I'm, you know, marathoning Netflix or something that I'm trying to do at the behest of other nerdy friends is watch Doctor Who. And I have to sit there with my sketchbook. Like, I am so bored watching the show, waiting for it to get good, that I can't sit there and just waste time. Like, I have to be reading stuff on the internet or drawing, or like, I have to be doing something because I just, it's not to the point where it's grabbed me yet.
How far are you along? Are you?
Oh, it's torturous, man. I think I might be 6 episodes into the first season in 2006. So I'm still with...
Have you gotten to the World War II stuff yet?
No. The one that I just saw was the Return of the Dalek in Salt Lake City.
Okay, that's a really crappy episode.
Yeah, though they're all crappy episodes. No one can act their way out of a cardboard box.
Wait till you get it. I think it's probably the next episode. It takes place in World War II, and it's the bombing of London, and they start introducing some other permanent characters to the series, and that's where it gets really good.
Yeah. Well, like
so
I said,
you're almost there. You're almost there.
I mean, I'm not a fan of Chris Eccleston. Is that the first guy?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Not my favorite.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah. Now, I did finish, and we won't talk about this because I mentioned it already last week, but I did finish Broadchurch, and I do enjoy David Tennant as an actor. So I'm trying to see if I can make it to when he's Doctor Who. And then I'm pretty sure I'm going to at least be paying attention because I know he can act.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
And Eccleston can act. He's too dry for the character.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, he is. Yeah, he's a pretty serious guy, or at least that's the impression I got in Broadchurch. Or I guess he can be a serious guy. I mean, it's all acting, I guess. Do you know? I know Gemma Arterton was a Bond girl, but was she in Doctor Who as well?
I'm trying to put a name to the face.
Who was she? She was in the new one. She's the girl that they covered in tar and left on the bed to die in one of the Bond movies. Do you remember that?
I don't remember that.
No.
And I've seen all of them a million times.
Yeah.
You think I'd remember somebody getting tarred and left on a bed?
Yeah. She was in Prince of Persia. She was in Quantum of Solace. That was the one that she was in.
Oh, the one I barely remember. Yeah. There's the only one I've ever seen once.
Yeah, it wasn't the greatest. It's with a weird name, kind of a weird plot point, and Bond is kind of all over the place. Yeah. So no, I don't think she was in Doctor Who. Does not look like it. The reason because I ask because she strikes me as the kind of person that like the kind of actor that would
oh,
be
no,
like
she's the, not in Doctor Who.
The though. Doctor's companion, I guess they call her.
Yes.
Yeah. Because I will watch Gemma Arterton in anything. And that's one of the things that I actually watched over the last couple weeks. I watched Runner Runner, which was on Netflix. And I was in the mood for something different. I've been watching a lot of, you know, sci-fi fantasy stuff. And I thought, I'll check this out. It looks good. I enjoy Justin Timberlake as an actor. I find him actually quite talented.
I agree.
Yeah, same thing with Arterton. I'll watch her in anything. On top of being extremely good looking, she's also a good actor. And Ben Affleck was in it. So I thought, okay, you know, I'm in. And it's basically like a crime drama. It's a thriller about this kid, Justin Timberlake, that gets cheated on a online poker site while attending Princeton. And he then goes down to Costa Rica or wherever the guy is, San Jose, and kind of confronts him, and the guy is Ben Affleck. And so then with the assistance of the second in command, Gemma Arterton, at this online gambling company, she ends up taking down, or he ends up taking down Ben Affleck. And it's kind of like, it's not quite as intricate as Ocean's 13.
Right.
But it's got that kind of flair. That kind of like, who's going to outsmart the other guy, misleading here and there, money buys you protection, and how are you going to do all this? And it was very, very good. And it's all kind of in the world of just like, money is just not an object. Like, I mean, these guys are having parties every night, and there's like, you know, girls everywhere, and poker, and alcohol, and just, it's a very interesting scene to kind of have this battle of wits play out. And I really enjoyed it. If you're looking for something to just kind of kill 90 minutes with, it was actually a pretty good little film.
I remember when it came out, and I remember some critics went, oh, this is amazing. And some critics, either loved it or they hated it. And I went, this is one of those movies, I'll wait for Netflix.
Yeah, it does not reinvent the wheel. You know, like, you kind of understand where it's going. You probably figure out how it's going to end. But the fun part of both these movies is how they get there, like how they twist and turn, and whether or not people are going to get caught, and does he know, does he not know, a lot of double-faced, two-timing kind of stuff going on, and I really enjoyed it. It was a good film. So what else? Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to ask you what else you've been watching.
I have been watching, well, unfortunately this past weekend, I had a couple hours to sit around and I was just playing video games. I was like, I just need something in the background while I'm playing games. I'll watch I, Frankenstein. It just showed up on Netflix a couple weeks ago.
That sounds like a mistake.
Yeah, it was an awful mistake. It literally should have been a video game. That's exact. The entire plot, you're like, okay, this is like a cheesy B video game. It begins in 1700s when Frankenstein was supposedly created, or the Frankenstein's monster was supposedly created. And he goes and he kills Dr. Frankenstein's wife or girlfriend or whatever, and Dr. Frankenstein hunts him down to the ends of the earth. And this is the opening scene. Like, this is like the first 3 minutes.
Wow.
And then it explains that he killed Dr. Frankenstein, or Dr. Frankenstein dies trying to kill him. And he takes Frankenstein all the way to the hometown that he grew up in and buries him in the family crypt. And then demons and gargoyles show up. And they want Frankenstein.
Okay.
No joke. That's exactly what happens. And you're like, why are there gargoyles coming to life? Why are there demons? What is going on? And supposedly, demons can only come out at night or something stupid like that. And the gargoyles have been left by the angels to protect mankind.
Of course they have.
And somehow he is a human body that is without a soul, and so the demons want him because it might help them create more, because when you kill a demon, they can't come back. But if they had bodies without souls, they could come back.
Yeah, none of that at all sounds like an original idea, right?
No, nope, and it's all really bad CG. It's full of really unmemorable actors, though you know who is in it. And when I was watching it, both Erica, my wife, and I said, why do I know that guy? Why do I know that guy? And then we looked him up. He's in Marco Polo.
Oh.
One of the angels is the Arabian guy that is like the bill collector.
Okay.
You know, the guy that's in charge of the taxes and stuff?
Yeah.
He's one of the angels. And and he's about the best actor in the whole movie. Him and Aaron Urquhart. You're like, okay, they're in a scene together. I can watch this. There's some acting going on.
Yeah, there's some cadence and some, they're actually reading and it sounds pretty good, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really, it was garbage. Like halfway through, we almost stopped it, but we're like, we've made it this far. We might as well sit through the rest of the thing. It's not like we're really watching it. We're busy doing other things. So it's just playing in the background.
Yeah.
But there's, I was like, It was bad.
Yeah, and there's no excuse for bad CG these days. I mean, like, you are going to get called out by every nerd and even the average film goer now is going to be like, what is going on there?
And the biggest shame in the whole movie is, I don't think it's a spoiler, but Bill Nighy or what, Nye,
yeah,
whatever
Bill
his name
Nye,
is,
yeah.
He is in it and he is the bad guy, of course.
No.
Yeah.
Not the bad guy.
Oh, he's the bad guy. And they might as well have just stamped Underworld on his forehead. Because that was pretty much the exact same plot.
Yeah.
He is the bad guy. And you could tell it was like he did this for the money.
Yeah.
Like, this was like, he wasn't in it. He's fine. But he just looks totally like, I don't want to be here.
Yeah. I feel like there's two schools of actors. You know, there's the actors that wait and wait and wait and bring in like crazy big bucks for one particular movie. And not all of their movies are good. You know, like sometimes they're stinkers. It's not great. I mean, like I would say, like, say Angelina Jolie, I've seen her in some very good movies. I've seen her in some shit movies.
Yep.
But she doesn't do tons, right? Then you've got someone like Liam Neeson. He's a bit of a bigger name now, but a lot of these guys are just, they'll just do everything. They just keep working, and it's not like they're making big noise about it. No one's kind of writing articles about how much money they're making per movie, but they're just keeping their face out there and they're just doing work, you know.
The best example of that, Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
If you look at his IMDb page, I think he has the record of like the most listings or something like that.
Probably.
He does like 12 films a year. Like, yeah. There's stuff that, like, there's B movie stuff that, like, he makes a cameo in. And I'm like, wait a minute, why is he in this? Why did they nobody advertise that he was in this?
Yeah.
He waved to the camera and that was his scene.
Nice. Yeah, I feel like, and I'm sure a lot of it has to do with the personality of the actor as well, but I feel like Samuel L. Jackson just kind of does whatever the hell he wants.
Yep.
I think he's like, that sounds like an interesting script. I mean, if he calls you up and says, hey, can I have a bit part in your movie? The answer is yes.
Yes, it is.
Yes, you can. You know, you can do whatever you want. And I'm sure that at some point, you know, actors probably have some fun with some of their clout in terms of like being able to work on projects that they want to work on, things that maybe aren't going to earn them kind of tons of money. But Bill Nye, to me, just strikes me as a guy that just has to be in everything because he really is a one-trick pony. Like, I like him. Don't get me wrong. I enjoy him and all the things that I have seen him in. But he is the same guy to the point when he was under that, it was either a combination of makeup and or the CG effects where they were capturing him for Pirates of the Caribbean. I knew it was him immediately.
There is a film. I got to look it up and I'll tell you it right now. If you want to see him do a different sort of role, it is, give me a second here. I'll tell you the film and it's worth watching. You'll be like, really? This is a very different role for him. He did it.
Well,
I am on his IMDb page here.
The podcast is listening to you scroll, Lou.
I'm sure it is. He's a hitman in it. I'm trying to remember.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
And he's the comic relief.
God, this is the moment in the podcast where I wish I could do a killer Nye impression.
It's Wild Target.
Wild Target.
Oh, okay. And he plays a hitman and he doesn't want to be a hitman. It's what his family does. And his mother before him was a hitman and he must honor the tradition and be a hitman. And he's forced to take a protege and it's Rupert Grint from Harry Potter. And the two of them like stumble over everything. And he's a really good hitman, but it's like he whines about it as he's like killing people. Like, I really don't want to kill this person. Why do I have to do this again? Oh, that's right. Lots of money. And it's a very different movie. It's really funny.
It's only from 2010.
Yeah.
Wow. I will bookmark this and see if I can't find a way to check it out.
And he falls in love with a woman he's supposed to kill. Who's played by Emily Blunt.
Oh, nice.
So.
She was in that movie with Tom Cruise recently, right?
Yes.
Like, does Emily Blunt?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Right. I shall take it under advisement, sir. Under advisement. For me, something else that I caught, which is not, it hasn't been something I've watched, because it's just a trailer right now. But if you look for The Dam Keeper, you can go to thedamkeeper.com, D-A-M, Keeper, with the in front of it. It is a really cute looking animated film that's coming out, and I'll give you a little bit of a synopsis here. The Dam Keeper, an original animated short film by feature animation artists Robert Kondo and Dice Tatsumi, tells the tale of a young pig encumbered with an important job and the meeting of a new classmate who changes everything. A first-time collaboration between some of the most talented artists in animation, The Dam Keeper made its world premiere as an official selection at the 2014 Berlin International Film Festival and is slated to make its U.S. premiere at the New York International Children's Film Festival this spring. It just looks
gorgeous.
It's so cute. Deals with some topics that have been in the news lately, the last year or so, in terms of like bullying and how that affects, kids and stuff like that. And, this kid is kind of the little pig is basically a blue collar kid. From what I can tell, he's the dam keeper. So he's got to keep the dam going for the town. And as a result, he often has to go to school dirty, covered in mud, this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And other kids tease him and then he's got a friend that, sticks up for him. It's beautiful design, just crisp, clear, clean, very appealing characters. Everything is anthropomorphic. So it's like there's a fox, there's a pig, there's an alligator, that kind of stuff. And I feel like it might be CG, but then it's got like a cel-shaded pastel kind of filter on it. Yeah. And it's not really kind of like very fluid animation. It kind of goes pose to pose. So it's meant to tell a very heartwarming story. And I feel like they're using a very warm type of art to communicate to that to people. The website is also super cool. If you go there, they've got a Facebook meter at the bottom of one of the towers on the right-hand side. And as they get more Facebook likes, then more of the black and white drawing that is the website gets colored in, which I thought was really
neat.
Very
cool.
Yeah. And if you go into the About section, it's all very interactive. Normally, I don't like it when websites play music, but this website has a nice little kind of ambient music that plays in the background. And it's not intrusive. Like, it actually kind of, like, makes you take a breath, you know, before you decide to nose around on their website. The About section is really, really cool. Lots of stuff to click around on. And basically, if it looks like a button, click it and find out what's happening. I would really highly recommend checking it out. And if you can get to, a film festival that has this playing, or perhaps once it's done its rounds, look it up on probably Vimeo, I guess, would be your first pick. They might put it on YouTube as well. I know the trailer is on YouTube. It just looks like a really fun little film. I'm really intrigued by it.
It looks very clever. I kind of want to see this.
Mm. Yeah, I'm not sure how long it is. I didn't see any kind of indication, but at the same time, I didn't want to nose around too much because I kind of want to see the film first and then go kind of nosing around behind the scenes.
If it's one of those short films and they're shooting for something like an Oscar or something for the short film section, it's got to be around, I think, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, like, I haven't seen the box trolls. And one of the things that I've been avoiding, like, the plague is all this cool behind-the-scenes art and, like, the box trolls art book. Like, I want to see them desperately, but I just don't want to look because I'm worried about spoilers. And I know I'm really going to want to see that film. So I have to rent it one of these days as soon as it's available to rent, which I think might be later on this month.
I think it's coming out this month or next month on Blu-ray.
I was disappointed that they didn't release it for Christmas. I thought that might have been a Christmas Blu-ray, but did not happen. So for me, after that, I don't have to talk about the stuff at length. I just had this stint in the last little while where I've been rewatching stuff that I've already seen. I wanted something safe. Like, I'm in a mood and I just want to sit down to Netflix and not have to worry about searching for 10, 20 minutes to find out what the hell I want to watch. And all of the DC animated directed videos pieces are on Netflix
now. I'm jealous, sir.
Man. So The Dark Knight Returns Part 1 and 2. Hammond just mentioned that last week. Superman versus the Elite, All-Star Superman, Batman Year One. I haven't watched all of these, but I'm probably going to. They're all on Netflix, and they're all just wicked animation. It's not television cartoons, so people get shot, people bleed, people die. Batman breaks people's kneecaps. Like, it is hard-hitting stuff. Same thing with the Superman ones. I mean, when he punches somebody, he just lays into them. They don't have to worry about six-year-olds watching at home. And it's very, very good. I find that sometimes they can hit or miss with the Superman ones because they change the voices. And sometimes I'm not on board. And they change the designs, which is good. Like, I mean, it's important that they try out new things. And he has a little bit of a different look every time. But they don't always speak to my design sense and appeal. And then I kind of get, you know, like, why does Superman look old? And it's just because they put too many lines on his face. And, like, that kind of stuff is kind of weird. But I really enjoy all of these DC direct-to-video features.
If Assault on Arkham is in that list, you should watch Assault on Arkham.
I don't think it is. I know Batman Year One is in there, and that's kind of an anime one. I feel like there's another one that's in there. I was looking for the one that was meant to go between The Dark Knight Returns and The Dark Knight Rises. There was a series of shorts.
I want to say that's Batman Year One.
No, I've seen it before. And it's not Batman Year One. It's, I don't remember the name of it now, But it was a bunch of short films. It wasn't actually just one movie. Batman Year One is like a solid story.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure that if I look it up on IMDb, it'll show up. But yeah.
Assault on Arkham, if that's in that list of direct-to-video on Netflix in Canada, I highly recommend it. Batman is a side character. It is not about Batman.
No, yeah, I knew that. Yeah.
Okay. Because I rented it and didn't know that, and I was like, wait, where's Batman? I like this. This is awesome.
Yeah.
Where's Batman?
That would be frustrating, even if you were in the right kind of place for that.
I was like, because they advertised it, and there's Batman on the cover and everything, and I was like, I thought this was Batman. This is awesome. And I'm enjoying every minute of it. And then Batman shows up towards the beginning and the end.
Yeah.
And when he shows up at the end, I was like, oh, he's here to kick ass. Okay.
Yeah, you've got to be careful with the animated stuff. Batman Gotham Knight is the one that I'm thinking of.
Yes.
That's the one that has all the shorts. The cover art for Batman The Dark Knight Returns, the animated versions, it's nothing like the art style of the show. Like, nothing. It's very, very misleading. Whereas things like Superman versus the Elite and Batman Year One are pretty much taken right from the film. So you know kind of from the poster what you're getting into. So it's weird. Like, you've got to be very careful. It's like comic books. Like, you'll see some cover artist has done some magical cover, you know, on, I don't know, Batgirl 32 or whatever. And then you go to read it and it's not at all what the cover kind of advertised.
Yep.
I've always found that weird about comic books, is that they'll have these variant covers, but then inside it's not. You know, I thought that, you know, it would be cool to have the artist that drew the book draw the cover, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, they're fun. They're we've talked about them at length on the show before, usually one at a time as I've seen them with some friends, but they're absolutely worth checking out. Well, that's it for me for video, dude. I guess we can just move on. Something that I've been taking to doing lately is reading before I go to bed, which is a luxury. I don't always have a chance. Normally I'm so bloody tired, I just kind of crash. But I got a fantastic Christmas gift this year called Zits, Peace, Love, and Wi-Fi. And it's the latest Zits Treasury from Jerry Scott and Jim Borgman, two of my absolute favorite cartoonists. And I would say that they are my favorite comic strip artists right now, as far as, maybe not ever, but they are certainly my modern favorite. And what I like about what they're doing now, and I know that I've talked about this on the Citadel Cafe before, is that the smaller collections that used to come out from Andrews and McNeil, I felt like I was kind of getting kind of cheated, because they were blowing up comics to be one page. They were taking images from like three pages before and kind of using them as filler art, and it really kind of felt cheap. This is not the case. This is a treasury, and they are no longer making the little collection editions. It's only treasuries all the time. Every treasury has all new comics, so there's no collecting the previous three little books into one big one.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and it is large format. So on a single page, you'll see an entire Sunday comic that's been reduced a little bit from how it would have appeared in the Sunday paper. But then you get two strips high on each page, the regular daily comic strip that appears in the newspapers. Now, daily comic strips in newspapers, I don't remember the last time I looked at a newspaper, but they are small. Like, they might be 4 inches long. They're really, really tiny. And this is printed at, whew, I don't know, 11 by, probably 11 by 5 or 11 by, no. Yeah, 11 by 8. The book is longer than 11 by 8. It might even be 9 by 14. It's a big book. It's really cool to have two very large strips. And for myself, be able to see the art and how they lettered everything and some of the details of some of the stuff they did do. Because Scott and Borgman put some really cool detail into like the backgrounds, or like little skull and crossbones that are inside the balloons when someone's mad. Like, stuff like that that you wouldn't see if it was the size of a tip of a pencil, right? So yeah. Seeing this kind of stuff at the scale is really, really cool. So if you haven't checked it out, look up Zits, Peace, Love, and Wi-Fi. It's got a psychedelic cover. You can't miss it. Right on. Well, that brings us into the Internet Minute. This, of course, is brought to you by our sponsor, tweakedaudio.com. You can visit tweakedaudio.com for high-performance, noise-reducing earbuds. The code at checkout is TCC for our show. That will get you free shipping and 30% off your entire order. Website, once again, is tweakedaudio.com, and our code is TCC. So what is your pick this week, sir?
Okay, my pick this week, we're staying with DC stuff. I'm sorry.
No, it's perfect.
I was looking for zombie news this week for Zombies at My Podcast, and IO9 had a short Superman film. It is called A Smallville Man, and it is a four-minute short film done by Mercurio Abril, and it features the music of the Foo Fighters. And it is their song, A Walk, I think it's called. And it is basically like a third world nation, and this guy is trying to bring vegetables to the market so he can sell and get feed his family. And a dictator is overthrowing the government or something like that. And Superman hears word of it in the Daily Planet and peels off his suit and flies off to South America to rescue these poor people, and he knocks a helicopter out of the sky and saves everybody. And it's all done in like this unique art style that it's really hard to describe.
Yeah, it's like similar to the Blizzard videos that came out recently, where it's more moving paintings.
Yes.
Than it is real animation. It's kind of like key drawings in kind of a pastel black and white painting. And it's beautiful. One of the reasons we were a little bit late starting the show is because I had watched it and I couldn't stop watching it.
And they do this, it does this interesting throwback where you see Superman's father, John Kent, break up a fight at like that they witness when they're coming out of like a diner or something. And it's supposed to be reminiscent of what makes Superman, Superman.
Yeah.
It's really neat.
Yeah. It's just about, you know, his Pa Kent going after some bullies, and then on a much larger scale, Superman doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was beautiful. It was very, very well done. I liked the song too. It was a little bit weird listening to the Foo Fighters and then watching Superman, but you know, it's also kind of cool to see someone just take inspiration from that song and then pull in something else that they're inspired by and tie them together. And it was very artfully done.
It was, yeah, I saw this and I had to watch it twice. I was like, wow, this is really well done.
So for my pick this week, I've got it's a tweet, actually. I was talking with Kimberly Ling online. She's an artist that I follow in Britain. And she tweeted out this picture of a building, and all of one side of the building was all plant. It was a living wall. And this seems to be happening a lot in architecture lately. And it kind of took her by surprise. And I made a comment saying like, oh my gosh, like, I mean, I'd love to see the whole thing. Cause the image that she shared was kind of the corner of a building, and it was really mostly in shadow. So it was really cool to get a couple of pics later on and see a closer look at it. But the conversation went into talking about, you know, living walls and how they tend to be, I don't want to say a trend, but it's a very cool feature that a lot of places are putting into architecture now. Like our new farmers market building here in Halifax has a green roof. So there's lots of plants on the roofs. There's a gray water system for, you know, the bathroom and toiletries and stuff that's in the building, so that when you're flushing a toilet, you're not flushing it with clean water, you're flushing it with runoff water from the greenhouse on the roof of the building. Stuff like that, which I think is very, very cool. And one of the universities here in town, St. Mary's, has I guess they call it a living wall in one of their communal areas for the students. And it's huge. It's got to be three or four stories tall. And it's got like a little bit of a waterfall happening in it. And it's a great place. You know, if you go in there, I met a friend there a little while ago, because that's where she works. And just kind of waiting there and wishing that I had something like that when I was in university, like to go and study and, you know, be near a bunch of plants and have, you know, the sound of running water and that kind of thing would be very different than kind of your traditional library or school quad, where there just tends to be a lot going on.
There is a house near the apartment I was in before I moved to where I am now. And I used to have to walk past it every day on my way to work. And it was an all-brick building. It was the only brick building in the neighborhood. And as soon as winter hit, all the leaves would die. But in all spring, fall, spring, summer, the entire outside of the building was covered in ivy.
Mm.
And the whole building. Like, you couldn't... I was amazed that it didn't overgrow over the windows. There was so much of it.
Yeah. And these are almost like, they're like potted plants. So it's like having rows and rows of like a vertical, I guess they'd be horizontal planters, but then they'd be arranged vertically up the side of a wall.
Right.
It'd be probably a pretty solid feat of engineering too, because I mean, there has to be some sort of watering system. You know, I mean, you can't just, you know, stick your watering can out the window, you know, and get most of it, right? Somebody has to be out
there's
either
probably
with
a sprinkler system that goes into the wall.
Yeah, that or like somebody, you know, turns on the faucet at the top, or if you water the top, it kind of trickles down, something like that, you know. Well, I mean, a lot of them that are outside, sure. I mean, you know, if it rains, then you're solid. You know, you don't have to worry too much about it. I imagine most of these are probably a little bit easier to do in warmer climates on the outside. The one here at St. Mary's is inside. And something else that I noticed, because I was doing a little bit of research about this before the show, and I don't know why I went to this particular site, just probably because of the word search, but it's the 15 hottest fresh bathroom trends in 2014. I'm not planning on redecorating my bathroom, but the first picture is a standalone pedestal tub with a green wall. So instead of having, you know, tiles right next to you when you're in the tub, as most bathrooms do, it's got a green wall, which I thought was just really cool. I imagine that would be a very peaceful place to relax and take a bath. I mean, I'm not a bath person, but if I had a green wall near or around my shower, I think that would be probably a pretty relaxing thing.
Yeah, though I can't imagine getting out of the tub. I'm usually grabbing for the wall. I picture myself taking a plant with me.
You get a fistful of moss. It's like,
yes,
this is not what I planned.
No.
Yeah. I mean, I you know, in a bathroom where, you know, you've obviously got a lot of moisture, you've taken a shower, there's kind of steam everywhere and stuff like that, it would probably be pretty easy to keep the plants going. You're probably pretty low maintenance.
Yeah. I can't imagine just in general that it's that much maintenance in a bathroom.
Mm. Especially one that's only like 6 feet wide. Like the wall, the building that I first mentioned and the wall at the university are both ginormous. This is just like 8 feet tall, 6 feet wide. You know, it's got a bathtub next to it. It seemed like it would be pretty easy to maintain. I'm wondering if they're expensive though. Like, I mean, it's kind of trendy, and I'm wondering.
I can imagine that they are.
Yeah.
My father is in gardening for a living.
Oh yeah.
And I'm pretty sure stuff like this is really expensive.
You should ask him and let me know.
I'm afraid to show it to him because it might give him ideas for his own house.
Nice. Everybody needs a hobby, Lou.
My father's the kind of person that takes a hobby and then goes even further.
Ah, okay. So, he's the hobby enthusiast then.
Yes, yes.
Well, that wraps up this episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on the citadelcafe.com/live. Our mobile audio stream is provided by alphageekradio.com. You can listen to the show live on Alpha Geek Radio on your computer or your favorite mobile browser. Just point it to mobile.alphageekradio.com and tune in to channel 1 at showtime. Music for the show was composed by Kevin McLeod, and the episode will be available on demand via iTunes and our website, The Citadel Cafe. That is where you can also go to choose the notes for this particular episode. Some of the cool things that Lou and I mentioned will be posted up there as well. Email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com or find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything that I am doing online at joelduggan.com. And please check out the Patreon page for the show. You can visit patreon.com/joelduggan. And that's a great way to support my comic work as well as this podcast. Lou, where can people find you online?
The easiest way to find me is at BusyZombieLord on Twitter. Or you can check out my show at zombiesatemypodcast.com. And stay tuned on my Twitter feed, you will see links to my new show when it premieres, probably in the next week or two.
Yep. Keep your eyes peeled for Off the Cuff. You've been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two. You know, it's really funny with all the crazy cool things that we can do with technology these days. Still, voice over IP podcasting over Skype is just so sketchy sometimes.
The thing I don't get is I don't understand why Skype doesn't have just a record the call button.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it should be so easy for them to just push a button and it records the call.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it needed, like, you know, both members to say, okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, gosh, I can record all kinds of stuff on my end and I don't have to tell anybody, you know, like this way, it's actually a little bit more nefarious than it would be if it was actually built into Skype. I mean, although I don't know, knowing how Skype operates, I'm not sure if I trust Skype to record everything, even though I've pushed the big red button. I'm much more inclined to trust Audio Hijack Pro. We have a long track record together of probably about 131 episodes. For those of you about to listen, we apologize. Wouldn't be the new year without at least some sort of technical difficulty.
Of course not.
Yeah. Maybe it's you. Stopping the stream in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, bye.